This is the 4501 Podcast, episode 27, 23andMe Health and Ancestry Review. Tony, what's up, man?
Not too much, Mark. How about you?
I'm very excited to see you because I haven't talked to you in a while. What's up, man?
I'm in Vietnam. I made it here. I've been here for a little over a week now, and it's hot as hell and humid, very humid here.
Well, that sounds like Maryland, so I don't think you're in Vietnam. You could be in Maryland for all I know.
That's true. I heard you guys had like that heat wave. Is it still going on?
Yeah, I mean, the humidity is pretty tough, especially in D.C. because D.C. is a swamp, or it was built upon a swamp. So it's always pretty humid. And like the past couple of days, we've been getting a lot of like thunder storms, like whatever. There's a specific phrase for them and I forget what they're called. Heat storms. Maybe that's it. I don't remember.
Okay. Yeah. In the evening, right?
Yeah. In the evening, it's just been like wicked thunderstorms popping up with a lot of rain. And then they literally pass through for like 20 minutes and then they're gone and then it's fine.
And it probably cools things off, hopefully, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But then it heats back up. So yeah. It's a very transient coolness.
Well, I hope you're staying cool in your nice air-conditioned room there.
I am. You know, I keep my house at a nice 67 degrees Fahrenheit. Nice and cool. That's year beautiful. Round. So,
I love it.
I don't pay for electricity. So, you know, got to keep it cool. Got to take advantage of not paying for electricity. So all we're good.
Along with all your Bitcoin mining rigs that you have.
Yeah.
That would
the price of Bitcoin just dropped below 10,000, man.
20,000 or 10,000?
10,000.
Oh, wow. It was
It went up to 12 like last week and then it dropped down.
You getting in on that?
No, not yet.
Just a couple coins. Come on.
just an imaginary coin. All right. So today's episode is about what, Tony? You tell me.
23andMe, which is, I've never used it, but it's a DNA ancestry test, genetics kind of stuff. That's right up your alley. You've used it, right? You and Jess, or just you?
We both have used it, primarily for ancestry purposes, even though like I kind of know my ancestry. It's more for her, kind of to figure out where she's from. And 23andMe is basically a DNA testing kit, and basically you send your DNA profile you send your spit off to this company. They will process your spit and they will get the DNA, they'll extract the DNA out of it, and then they will sequence it, and then they can tell you kind of a lot of different stuff based on basically like your ancestry or if you're predisposed to any health conditions or even some quirky traits. So like they can tell if like you can smell if your pee smells after you eat asparagus or if you're more inclined to be afraid of public speaking. It's just like some random traits that they actually are able to screen for.
What? That's so crazy. They can tell that from your DNA.
Yeah, and I don't know quite how they do that. I'm not quite sure because obviously people, like for instance, public speaking, that's a lot of different factors involved. But
Really. Like
for the ones like most likely, so they don't even say like you will be. It's more like the phrasing they use is more likely to be afraid rather than you are afraid. You know, it's like so it's all this stuff is very suggestive. Beyond the ancestry stuff. The ancestry stuff is really you are this based on the information that we have. But everything else is very like you are more likely or less likely to have this characteristic or have this kind of health predisposition.
Okay, I get it. So do they give it like a percentage as well or just like more likely or most likely?
Like you're so, yeah, they don't really give you percentages because that's, I think, one of the things that the 23andMe company is very cognizant of is that this isn't, they're not trying to be a diagnostic tool, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want to be an alarmist for your health. So they're here just to provide information saying that you could be more likely to have disease X, Y, or Z. in, as far as that goes. But they're not, they're certainly not, and there's a lot of disclaimers when you actually go into your profile saying that this is not a diagnostic tool. Like, if you want to make sure that you don't have this disease, then you have to go to an actual medical professional and they'll diagnose you properly.
Okay. And a medical professional would not look at your DNA. They would look at other things, right? Like,
yeah, they would probably look at, I mean, you would go to a medical doctor or clinician and they could look at your genetic sequences. Like, I don't know. Like, I've never had to go through that process before, but I'm guessing they would just look at your symptoms, your family history. Maybe nowadays they would look at your genetic sequence, but I'm not sure. I think you would definitely have to go through like symptoms and family history. That's most of the time when you're going through diseases or you're trying to figure out what disease you have. That's kind of like the first step of diagnosing a problem.
Mm-hmm. So in the past, I've heard about sequencing DNA. I'm not really sure what that means, but is the fact that we have sequenced DNA giving us the ability to do these DNA tests now?
Yeah. So do you ever have you ever heard of the Human Genome Project?
Right, right. Yes, yes.
Have you heard of that?
I've heard of it, but I can't speak intelligently about it. I don't know.
So sequencing, we use sequencing nowadays all the time. And so the Human Genome Project started back in the early 2000s when the sequencer was just invented. And all the sequencer is basically you put insert some DNA into this machine. And this machine essentially will read the sequence of your DNA. And that's pretty easy to do because your DNA, the building blocks of your life, everyone has heard of it before, is actually only made up of four different molecules. Mm. We call them nucleic acids. And it's pretty easy. It's an A, a T, a C, and a G. And those four letters build kind of the code for DNA. And so all the sequencer is doing is reading the order of those A, T, C, and Gs. And that's all it's doing.
How many are there? Like in one of those double helix things, right?
Yeah, you got me there. It's billions. I don't say billions, but actually I could say billions. It's very different. This is just a very basic and rudimentary explanation of what sequencing is.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially that's all it's doing. It's reading A, T, C's, and G's and putting them in a specific order.
Okay. And each cell has its own copy of that same exact sequence? Is that how it works?
Yes. And so if I'm understanding you correctly, I think, most of the time when you go for DNA tests, they'll take cheek swabs, right? So
inside
like, that's why, yeah. And so okay. Like for paternity tests, they'll take a cheek swab. For 23andMe, they ask you to spit in a tube. And the reason for that is because you actually have epithelial cells or skin cells that are constantly getting shedded inside your mouth. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I didn't know that though.
So when you're getting those cheek swabs, when you're spitting, you're actually spitting those cells, or you're putting those skin cells onto either the swab or you're spitting them into that tube. So they're trying to collect those cells and use those cells for DNA.
So your spit itself doesn't have DNA in it. It's your skin cells that has the DNA.
It's the skin cells that have it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What is that's really weird. What about like your hair, does your hair have DNA in it?
I don't think your hair does. I think your hair,
because it's
dead. I have no idea. I think it does. Actually, I have no idea.
Tricked you there. I don't know.
So I think hair is made out of keratin, right? I think hair is actually like a protein.
Okay.
And so I think if you pulled out the root of a hair, you could have DNA, but hair itself doesn't.
Does your blood have DNA?
Does your blood have DNA? No. Well, depends.
It depends.
Red blood cells don't have a nucleus.
Okay. And you need a nucleus to have DNA?
Yeah.
That's where it lives?
Yeah. But you have cells inside your blood in addition to your red blood cells that, you know, have nucleuses. Like your immune cells are in your blood.
Oh, okay. Right. It's like a concoction.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. Wow. So then all you did was you got this thing in the mail. Did they send it to you in the mail and you spit in a tube?
No. So you can actually, they're pretty retail now. Like you can actually go to like a Target or an Amazon or a Walmart or a Walgreens or a Rite Aid or a I don't know, whatever. You can go anywhere. I think you actually can get them at like Best Buy too.
Okay.
No lie, you can get them at Best Buy. And basically it's a kit, and this kit has a tube in it, and the tube you spit into, and then you just put the tube back into the box that you purchased into this kit. Postage is included, and you just drop it in a mailbox. And kind of, I think it was like 4 weeks later, you get your results back online.
That's not bad turnaround time, considering I'm sure a lot of people are doing this.
Yeah, and so from experience, I know for a fact that it probably, like the shipping, if like shipping is shipping. So I think a week of those 4 weeks is actually shipping to get mm-hmm. there, because mm-hmm. I think their facility's in Arizona. And I'm sure they have it kind of standardized to a point where it's very, not compartmentalized, but what's like the chain, like sectionalized? Do you know what I'm talking about? Like when you put a card together, you put it in parts.
When you put a card together? Oh, like, yeah, assembly line kind of thing?
Yeah, it's like an assembly line process. So one department will isolate the DNA from your spit, and then the next one will probably purify the DNA from your spit, and then the last step will be actually sequencing your DNA from the spit.
Okay. And these are like people with science degrees working there, probably like human beings doing this, not like I mean, some of it's computers, right? But people manually have to.
So definitely. So I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
I would assume that there's actually, well, you know, I'm sure there's some level of automation going into this, honestly, because it's really not that hard. Because what they do is when you spit into this tube, they have a specific level that you need to spit, like a specific volume. And so they say, add your spit to this tube until you get to this line. And I'm sure before actually sending out these kits, they did some R&D and they figured out that you need this specific volume spit. And this, when you input this into a machine, it can go through automation and the machine will start adding all the necessary reagents and stuff like that to actually extract the DNA out of your spit and your saliva. So I don't know.
They probably use
how much human
use the Theranos machine.
Let's not go there. I don't know. I haven't watched that documentary, but Theranos. He's Theranos. Let's just be real. You Elizabeth Holmes is your hero, right?
I don't like what she did, but I like her her style. Fake until you make it. I'm just kidding.
Jeez, man. Oh my God. All right, we just lost 10 million subscribers because of you.
No, it was a really good. It's a good documentary. That's all I'll say. And you should watch it. I would love to.
Then we can talk about it in a podcast.
Yeah, I'd love to get your episode. Like scientific, because you're like in that field, and love to see what you think about what went on there. And I mean, it's a documentary, but you have to take it with a grain of salt too, because it's not all true.
No, it's certainly biased. I mean, all documentaries are to a certain extent.
But anyway, you're just, sorry to get off course, but you're just talking about a combination, I guess, of manual and automated processing.
Yeah. I mean, if you're just adding reagents to a tube, I think that can easily be automated. But I think once you actually get your genetic sequence, that is specifically automated, or you need to run that through a computer, because when you actually sequence something, you get out literally hundreds of gigabytes of data. Like, I'm not lying. The size of these files are incredible, because you just get so much information out of them. And the trick is trying to develop programs using R or like Python mm-hmm. or MATLAB, and you're actually developing codes in programming language, like you're using program language to develop algorithms that will scan these data sets looking for kind of what type of DNA sequences pop up in your actual DNA that you submitted.
So this takes us back to like our big data episode, where you have this big chunk of raw data and you're looking for patterns in it or something that you could come up with like a conclusion from that seemingly random data.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so what what 23andMe does is that they actually just have like a broad sampling. Okay, so let's say like they have the DNA profiles of, I don't know, 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then let's say they find a gene that encodes for this specific protein. Now, what they'll do is they can actually identify what the DNA sequence is for that specific protein, and then they can compare that to all the rest of their clients. Mm-hmm. And so, like, let's say, for example, the DNA sequence for that protein was, let's say, ATCG. Okay, that's, it's very basic. And all 100 people had that sequence, ATCG. Well, now let's say you submit your DNA sample and yours is actually AACG. Mm-hmm. And so what that says is that you don't have kind of the common variant of that protein. You have a different variant. And so they'll actually put that on your report saying that, like, you have a different variant. We don't know what this means, but it could be that you're more susceptible to this thing, or you could be less susceptible based on this variant of this protein.
Yeah, from a computer science standpoint, you just explained machine learning right there, because you're feeding this algorithm different types of the same thing, right? So you could do the same thing with image processing. Like, you show a computer a picture of a dog, and it learns that that is what a dog looks like. But then you show a picture of a, instead of a white dog, a brown dog. So it's a different type of dog, but it's still a dog. And you just keep doing that, and it gets smarter and smarter as you keep on teaching it all these different variants of what dogs look like. So that's the first thing that I thought about when you explained that.
No, yeah, and I guess that is machine learning. I never thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just, the algorithm is just trying to keep on improving, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and I think with volume, this 23andMe company will get smarter and smarter because it has more data that it has looked at, and more conclusions that it can make about whatever it's trying to figure out. So
Well, let's take this a step further, because this is probably a main concern of a lot of people here. And so I took it, and basically one of the things that a lot of people are afraid of is giving their DNA profiles to a company. Like,
yeah,
they're very skeptical because they think now that this company is going to turn around and sell your DNA sequence to a different person, kind of like what Facebook does with your profiles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you,
like, for Facebook, they make you make these profiles, you give them all this information about you, like, I like computers, I like AMD cards, I like AMD CPUs, and then they can sell that to a marketing firm, and now this marketing firm has, there's a 28-year-old person who likes X, Y, and Z, right? And so a lot of people are afraid of that. Those people are going to do that, or this 23andMe company is actually going to do that, but at a very much, like, of a lot more specific level. Like these people with this type of DNA sequence seems to have this, like, they like this type of product, right? Does that make sense?
Oh, okay. So bringing it back to marketing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never thought of it like that, but yeah, that's kind of, I'm sure it's possible, right? Because if you talked about fear of public speaking before, if they can figure that out, then they could figure out probably preferences and whatnot.
Yeah, and then they're taking one step level. Like, they're like, this is your actual DNA sequence. This is something you can't easily change. This is who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I'm sure they have like their research and development department, and like, so they sent this stuff back in the mail to you or online, and this is the stuff that they're willing to give results to their customers, that subset of data. But I'm sure there's a whole bunch more. Like, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole bunch more conclusions that they're making behind the scenes that they haven't shared with you yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did this in December, I think, or January, and I've gotten like 4 more trait characteristics added to my profile.
Oh, cool. So it's updating as a, oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. But kind of going back to that privacy thing, they make you very aware that you can opt in to giving your DNA sequences to other people, or you can opt out. And so there is a choice whether or not you want to actually let them have your information and use that. And so what 23andMe has done, and I'm not quite sure, I haven't actually seen the data from this at all, to be honest, but they make it pretty well known that they've actually partnered with academic institutions. So people who use this DNA for actual medical relevance. Mm-hmm. And they'll actually partner with 23andMe. And for everyone who's opted into this program, meaning that they're allowing 23andMe to share their genetic data with this academic institution or this research lab. And you don't know what your data is being used for, like the project it's being used for. Mm-hmm. But you can easily opt out if you wanted to for that.
Okay. So two questions. Did you opt in or did you opt out?
I opted in for everything. Like,
did you?
Yeah.
What the hell was my second question? I have no idea. Brain fart. Did Jess opt in or out? Jess is your
wife. I don't know.
Wife.
I don't remember.
You don't remember. Did you read the fine print when you went through all this? Or did you just kind of
I definitely did.
Okay.
Oh, and I don't remember what it said, though.
I wanted to, I guess it wasn't more of a question, but when they're not selling it, they're just giving it away for good.
Yeah.
When they do that,
I mean, that's what it made it seem like they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I fully support. I think they probably don't associate a name or an identifier with your DNA, right? It's just...
No, they can't. They just give you... They can't use your name because that's against U.S. law. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't reveal medical information / names. Like, that's against... It's called HIPAA. You can't... That's a HIPAA violation.
Okay.
Automatically.
It falls under that.
But what they can do is they can give you, like, your age and your kind of your demographics. Like,
okay.
28-year-old Asian from the eastern part of the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sufficient. They don't need your name or anything like that to do whatever they're doing.
No, they don't. And honestly, if you actually added names to a scientific study, they would not take your article whatsoever.
Oh, it would be like void or something from the
start. They would just say, you need to remove this or else we're not like going to take it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's like a very big ethical kind of break. You can't do that. That's very unethical to do. Unless you had like the proper releases. Like if you said like we have a statement release, like this person is willing to submit their name and stuff like that. But I think overall in the science field, you pretty much don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Another concern I heard about people having with these DNA tests is crime. Like, I don't know how to phrase this. Like, you have this big database of DNA, and if somebody were to commit a crime and find like DNA at the crime scene, then they could go back, like the investigators could go back to this database and find you based on that. So I don't know if this was a lot of criminals that don't want to do these DNA tests, but or somebody who is planning on committing a crime. But that's another concern that I heard people expressing with this.
Well, they're criminals, so they shouldn't. I don't understand where you're going with this question, but like, if you're a criminal, you shouldn't be doing. You shouldn't be doing this. Period.
No. It was a word of mouth thing that I heard that just people are scared to have their DNA, I guess, sitting in a database, in some type of situation where they could get caught. Not necessarily criminals, or maybe I'm rephrasing it wrong, but.
What I do know is that there was actually a criminal that was arrested, I think it was in Washington, and one of his family members actually, so they had DNA evidence at the scene of the crime, but obviously you need the other half of it. You need a known reference. And so the U.S. federal government, the Department of Justice does have, like, I think they have a centralized DNA repository for known, like, if you ever commit a crime and you go to jail, in your process, you have DNA in that repository, right? But if you've never, mm-hmm. Gone to jail, if you've never been caught before, they obviously don't have a reference for it. And so when they were doing this crime investigation, they collected DNA from the evidence, but they couldn't link it to anyone. And so they went to 23andMe, or maybe it was Ancestry. That's another company. But they went to one of these companies and said, we have this DNA profile. We can't match it. Can we just look at yours? And basically, they were able to link that criminal with a person or a relative who had done one of these DNA tests, and then that's how they matched it. And so that's how they made the connection. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably what I heard before then. And that could they really do that with a relative of somebody?
Yeah, so it depends on how close you are to a relative. And 23andMe actually gives you they're able to approximate how distant or how much of a percentage you are related to someone else. I mean, and it's pretty easy to do. Like, you are, let's put it this way, not to get, and I told you there would be no math on this podcast, but there's going to be math on this podcast. So you are technically 50% of your genetically speaking, you are 50% of your mom and 50% of your dad, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so how related would you be to your sister?
The same?
No.
Well, if I'm 50-50 with my mom, so is she, then wouldn't we be the same?
Well, you're half related to
my sister. Yeah. I don't know. Intuitively, I want to say the same. Well, but
no, it's not.
Okay.
So you're only 50% related to your sister.
Oh, 50%? Okay.
Yeah.
That's so strange.
But that's pretty big.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's always the case, or is that an average?
No, that's like always the case. Well, we're speaking in generality now. Like, it could be variance. I don't know, but like ideally, it usually is 50%. You're 50% related to your sister.
Okay. I think that makes sense. I'm just gonna try to explain it out loud. I get half from my mom, half from my dad, and she gets half from my mom, half from my dad. But they don't necessarily. There's only 50% overlap between what we get. So like, if you cut a pie into four pieces, we each get two slices. I don't know, something like that.
Don't worry about it. But basically, it's derived off that. So like, your nephew would be like a blood nephew, would be so that's going to be more dilute. So it's, I think it's going to be not a half. It's going to be a quarter or an eighth.
Okay, so it just keeps chopping down.
It just keeps chopping down.
That's interesting.
But this is how you can make these relationships. It's just depending on how much genetic information is shared between people.
Right, right. I get that. Okay, that makes sense. What was one of the favorite findings that you got from your results?
So the traits weren't particularly exciting because I kind of knew all that stuff already. Like, you just know how you are, right? And I guess it confirms it. But the most exciting thing, I guess the most interesting thing, was finding out that I always thought I was 100% Chinese. Mm-hmm. But it turns out I'm 75% Chinese and 25% Vietnamese.
Oh, what do you know?
So you are in my homeland.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you're in my homeland.
There's definitely some cross between those cultures, because I see a lot of Chinese characters on buildings and temples and stuff here. And I didn't realize that there was that much sharing of culture here.
Yeah, and my family in China is actually from the southeastern part, so they're a lot closer to Vietnam than other parts of China.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense. Okay, yeah. So it makes a step, and I think I'm pretty sure that we identified that the Vietnamese blood came from my mom's side of the family somewhere.
Just through word of mouth with your parents, not on the test.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to track this stuff, yeah.
Yeah, because it's so long ago, and I'm sure overseas records are spotty. Even back in, the early 1900s in the United States, the records are spotty. So I can imagine, in China.
Yeah, and so for me, this was interesting. But I think for my wife, that was mind-blowing, because we didn't really know what she was. Her family has been here in Baltimore for, I want to say, hundreds of years. They have been here since maybe the American Revolution. So she's been here for a while.
She's got to be American then.
Well, she, yes. And so we're just trying to figure out where she came from. And it seems like she's predominantly from the United Kingdom, which we kind of assumed. But she's also from parts of Scandinavia and Amsterdam. I don't know what that's called. Central Europe. Is that Central Europe? You've been there before.
I once called Amsterdam Central Europe, but somebody said no, it's not. So I have no idea. Oh. Northern Europe.
Well, whatever. Maybe Northern. No. Well, I don't know. But like, so she's from, she's of European descent.
Yes.
That's a pretty simple one.
Yes. Cool. So that solidified that for her. You figured that out about you having Vietnamese ancestry. Anything else?
Yeah.
Well,
what's kind of cool about this is that they actually are able to identify what part of the country you're from. And so they found out Cork. Where's Cork? Cork is in
Ireland.
I think it's Ireland, right? Yeah. And so like for my wife, you could figure out her relatives are from Cork, Ireland. And then also she's also from Britain. So Great Britain or Britain, I should say England. And it actually told you her family's from like the Greater London area too.
Mm. Wow. That's really
specific. You're able to, I mean, for me, it was actually very accurate in predicting where I'm from. Like I've been to my family's ancestral village in China and the province was Guangzhou province. And when it popped up in there, it said Guangzhou. So I was really impressed how accurate it was.
That's really cool. That makes me want to take this test as well, just to see what it
gives
you.
You should. I have an offer code for get you 10% off.
What's the cost of it, retail?
Yeah, so that's the bad thing about this. So if you, what's good, I should say, is that they usually have sales. So like they might have a 4th of July sale on now, but during Mother's Day and Father's Day, they had a sale. I bought my kit on Black Friday during Thanksgiving for like $80. And so the retail of it is usually 200.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And so I would say if you can get it for like around $100 or less, that's a really good deal.
Mm-hmm. And combine that with your 10% discount and you got a hell of a deal.
Well, I don't know if you can do that, but what I do know is that there's different levels too. So if you're just interested in the genetic ancestry portion, that is cheaper than the other ones.
Okay.
So that might be like $40. But if you want the full kit, so like the genetic health history, the genetic traits, the genetic ancestry, that full kit is $200.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that you got the maximum there with that, like the most.
That kit was actually $80. And so that was a great deal.
Yeah. Yeah. For everything. Yeah. You did well. So Black Friday, this is the day to get it. If they have
if it happens again.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. I think that's all we really wanted to talk about. Was there anything else, Mark?
No, I mean, I've been talking this whole podcast, Tony. So do you have anything you want to say?
The only I can think of is there's another, this isn't the only one. There's Ancestry.com. They have their own, but I don't know if that necessarily has health into it, like the health aspect.
No, I think that's more basic the ancestry, like kind of just like where you're from, but oddly enough, if you have a dog, there are like that's hyperbole, but there are like dozens of dog ancestry kits.
No way.
Which is hilarious. I'm serious. Yeah. So dogs are actually one of the most easily tracked creatures in the world because they come from wolves. Humans have bred them over time. So humans kind of have an idea of where dogs come from. I'm serious. They are the most heavily tracked animal in the world because of breeding.
Yeah.
You have breeding records for the past 100, 200 years.
I just can't see somebody wanting to. I don't have a pet. I don't have a dog.
If you have a dog from a shelter, you don't know what kind of dog it is. You just want to go look at it. And so they have this DNA ancestry kit where you can figure out this dog is 100% bulldog or 80% Jack Russell Terrier, 20% Schnauzer or something, whatever.
Yeah. The first thing that popped into my head was like trying to build a family tree of your dog. And I'm like, who the hell wants to do that? But it's more for just knowing the breakdown of the breeds.
They already have those. Like they have those on paper, essentially. if you ever watch like the Westminster Dog Show or something like that, or like the, I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, I've in the seen United States. On TV.
But like those are called pedigrees. So they have those pedigrees traced back until the beginning of the American Kennel Club. Like, I'm serious. It's like horse breeding.
People
are crazy over that stuff.
I believe
it. Humans are a little difficult. You can't track human pedigrees as well. But dogs, you know.
Piece of cake.
piece of cake, exactly.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll end it on that note. The show notes for this episode will be available at the4501podcast.com/27. So hit us up there if you have any questions or comments. And without any further ado, what do we say?
Ladies and gentlemen,
thank
you for listening.
We will see you next week.
We will see you next week. You need to leave that in too, seriously.
It will be.
Because we're not screwing up the outro this time.
Okay.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We will see you next week.
All right. That's a wrap.
4501. Thanks for listening to this episode. Please follow us on Twitter at @the4501podcast to keep up with the latest news and events. If you have any suggestions for episodes or would like to contact us, shoot us an email at the4501podcast@gmail.com.